Roman Reigns has a mystery attacker, Kevin Owens continues to flourish with the stunner, and Trish versus Charlotte is official. Your full SmackDown Live review starts right after this. Check out shoptofind.com, and you can find what you're looking for. And there's a wide range of products from health and fitness to car parts, beds, furniture, and even fashion, home and garden, tools and hardware, toys and games. It's a new simple shopping search site to help you find products listed by smaller retailers. All you have to do is type in what you're looking for, and it will shoot you to where you want to be. All retailers that are listed also provide phone and mailing addresses and, of course, have secure sites. This website does not collect personal data from shoppers, and the entire site is SSL secure. So, again, that is shoptofind.com. Pretty easy, right? Shoptofind.com, and find what you're looking for today.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast, your place for the most passionate wrestling analysis on the web.
Just turn Roman heel. What is WWE waiting for?
When other wrestling podcasts put you to sleep, you can count on the WWE Podcast to keep you engaged and asking for more.
I've been watching wrestling for over 20 years, and that was one of the best matches I've ever seen.
This is unlike any other wrestling analysis. So without any further delay, let's get the show started right now.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast. Thank you for joining me. This is your SmackDown Live review for July 31st, 2019, the very last day of July. And SmackDown Live emanated last night, July 30th, from Memphis, Tennessee, Jerry the King Lawler's hometown. And he held King's Court, and Trish Stratus was his guest. And if you didn't already read the rumor mills, or really accidentally be spoiled by the show that from last week, you would have seen Charlotte's interruption coming as absolutely no surprise. And so Charlotte versus Trish is official for SummerSlam. And, you know, I'm going to start there. I want to start there because I think this segment over-delivered for me. If you listened to my show a few weeks ago, you would have, well, even last week, I believe I covered this topic of Trish possibly facing Charlotte at SummerSlam to keep Trish off the mic, to keep her far, far away from the microphone like she's allergic to it. And the reason for that is she's never been a great talker. And she was exposed greatly, just as Lita was on the mic when they faced Alexa Bliss on the mic going into a program with her. And it was just, it was terrible. It was just awful with her and Mickie James, just demolishing those two. And those two, Lita and Trish, having almost no retort, nothing of substance to come back at the heels with. It was just painful to watch. This past week, I was pleasantly surprised by Trish. She's never been a super energetic promo, never a great A-plus go-home promo. From Trish, where her strengths lie, is in her quiet anger, in her small inflections in her voice, her body language. That's where Trish thrives, and that's where she thrived this past SmackDown Live last night. I think that they did a very good job. If her lines were scripted and Trish memorized them, I couldn't tell. She did a great job of making them feel as authentic as possible during that exchange with Charlotte. And Charlotte, who's 9 times out of 10 on top of her game, and I don't feel like needs a whole lot of guidance during promos. At least that's my perception over the long haul here, over the large sample size and looking at Charlotte's career as a whole. I don't feel Charlotte has ever really needed somebody to script her promos. And just, she's more of a bullet point kind of gal. At least that's my perception. And with Trish, I don't think she's as quick-witted and quick on her feet as Charlotte and some of the other women on the roster. So her promo that was written was well written, and I think it was probably the result of Trish sitting down with a writer and creative and saying, "Hey, Trish, what would you say?" Instead of just having a writer tell Trish or what she's going to say, or Vince telling Trish what she's going to say, it felt like it was from Trish, but memorized from Trish, which is totally fine with me. The line about how there would be no trail to blaze if it wasn't for me and Lita and Jacqueline and Ivory, and she named off a couple of others. Like, that was a good line. She felt very confident in her line. She didn't stumble or stutter. That was very good. I want to talk about the segment because I saw it coming. If you guys read the rumor mills again, it was pretty obvious that this was going to happen, and that's fine. I think this match is somewhat of a dream match when you think about it. You know, beyond the surface of they're both blondes. Okay, we need to get past that. They're both blondes, yes, but they are connected in a much stronger way. And both women are poised and positioned and perceived as the leaders of their generation of women. And Trish, when she was the leader of the women back in the early 2000s to mid 2000s, she brought credibility back to the women's division that had all but, as Charlotte said on Tuesday night, had just been models in their underwear, which is true. But Trish and Lita and a few others that actually added credibility and legitimacy and watchability, to be totally frank with you, to that women's division at the time, you know, 15 years ago, she was the face of that division of credibility. She wasn't the Christy Hemmies of the world or the Kelly Kellys of the world that were just there for eye candy and, you know, early prepubescent boys and teenage boys to go goo-goo and gaga over with their jaws hanging out. And even though I was part of that exact demographic during that sexualizing of the women's division at the time, I still wasn't into that piece of it. Like, I, as much as my brain was wired to say, oh my God, look how hot she is, I was still interested in watching a wrestling show for watching the wrestling piece of it. It felt like the women's division back in that time was more of a built-in bathroom break without actually labeling it as a bathroom break. And it was Trish and Lita, again, and many others, that actually added to the watchability of the product to make you actually care about the matches and not just have bra and panties matches, gravy bowl matches, pillow fights, live sex shows with, well, Edge and Lita or whatever it was at one time. It was Lita and Trish who led the pack. So that's Trish's very quick, very brief description of what she meant to her division when she was on top. Charlotte, in the same way, is the leader in many ways, in of many fans' eyes, the top of the food chain when it comes to the WWE women. And yes, Becky has the belt, okay? We understand that. Bayley has the SmackDown Women's Championship belt. But it still feels like Charlotte is the top of the food chain. I still feel that way. She's got a presence about her. Her size certainly helps. She's got the lineage. Her last name doesn't hurt. She just has all the credentials to be a Hall of Famer, a shoo-in Hall of Famer. I think she will be. I think Becky will be. I think Asuka will be. And just Charlotte still has that feeling to her. As much as I don't want to see Charlotte have a 4-year reign with the SmackDown Women's Championship or Raw Women's Championship, it's a credit to her to make the fans feel as if she is still at the top of the food chain, even if she doesn't have the gold to show it. And so she, in many ways, is the leader of her generation. So it is quite a matchup when you think about it from that respect. And a dream matchup that I never knew I wanted, which is, hey, I think it's great. So credit to WWE, credit to Charlotte, and credit even more to Trish, who was on her game much more than she was the first time around with Lita in a tag team match. It was very well done, and I expect even more anticipation and build next week, maybe with what they did this week with Kofi and Randy Orton and having that not physical interaction or face-to-face interaction, but rather having that backstory to build from. You guys are all about telling stories. Here's a great way to do it. Pull on the history of both women. Try to parallel both women's careers. Not that they were identical, but show the similarities. Show that this is a dream match. Show us. I think it's easily doable. Beyond the fact that, oh, they're both blonde and they were both at the top of their game. Let's dig a little deeper than that, folks. Let's dig a little deeper. There's more to it with some of the items that I just outlined. So, all right, moving on to some other items from SmackDown Live. Kevin Owens defeating Drew McIntyre after delivering not one, but two stunners to Drew McIntyre. And one was on the desk, the announcer's desk, which didn't really put him down. It just kind of made him stumble into the ring to then just get a second stunner, and Kevin Owens gets the win. Kevin Owens is on quite a roll right now. Shane McMahon at the top of the show said that he's not going to be there to the depression of everybody in the arena. Of course, that was not the case, and Kevin Owens came out and basically played up that, we don't know how we're going to get through the show without you, Shane, and just sarcasm to the max. But I think it was delivered well. And having Shane McMahon not there, while I understand that it's a real issue for fans that Shane McMahon has been on TV more than a lot of the more deserving stars, and that's a legitimate gripe, which they're bringing it into the forefront and making it a storyline that's real. Always best when they do that. I think this still could have been an opportunity for Shane McMahon to get some of his heat back after 3 weeks in a row of being stunned approximately 46 times. It was a good opportunity for Shane to grab some heat this week and next week leading into their match at SummerSlam, in which I don't think there's a person on this earth that believes Kevin Owens is going to lose, which also scares me at the same time, because all these matches that appear to be locks for who's going to win and who's going to lose always scare the hell out of me, particularly on large pay-per-views. And this is one of their big four pay-per-views. So will I bet the farm on it? No. But would I have a friendly bet with somebody? Yes, sure. And that's why this match, although it's appearing to be a foregone conclusion, does still scare me just a bit with Vince McMahon's erratic booking at times to just swerve people. So, it was an opportunity missed. While Shane McMahon came out and he said these things, it looks like from like an iPhone sitting backstage or home or wherever. It was a missed opportunity. And I was hoping when Shane McMahon said that, it would be a straight out lie from Shane. And he shows up and batters Kevin Owens with a chair or has someone else do his dirty work or whatever. Or maybe a couple of low blows and Shane McMahon just beats down Kevin Owens and disrespects him. Something like that. To get the heat back, because I've already seen Kevin Owens beat the holy hell out of Shane McMahon for the last 3 weeks. So why would I want to watch SummerSlam to see him do it again? I mean, Shane McMahon's a good heel, but again, it's just storytelling 101. You want the heel to get the one up on the babyface. And again, this is just a general rule of thumb. Doesn't have to happen for every storyline. I understand that. But a general rule of thumb is that you want your audience to pay to watch the babyface overcome the heel and give the heel what he's got coming to him. Instead of just blowing the steam off, not 1 week in a row, not 2 weeks in a row, but 3 weeks in a row of Kevin Owens hitting the stunner on Shane McMahon multiple times. And again, I'm a fan of the stunner. I'm a fan of Kevin Owens stunning Shane McMahon. I love watching it. But my interest level for it is starting to diminish because I've already seen it. Okay, well, we've seen Kevin Owens do it. That's cool. I guess, well, we'll see him do it again. I'd watch it, but I wouldn't, buy the network for that. That's where the disconnect is. I think they went a little bit overboard with giving the fans what they want with Kevin. And I know they're trying to cement him as a babyface, cement the stunner that they're trying to use from the rub of Stone Cold using it for, my God, his entire career of being Stone Cold anyway. And I understand what they're doing, all that, but you want the fans to rally behind him from a beating. And hopefully we get that next week. It's only 1 week left to build. But to me, Kevin Owens needs to get his ass kicked. Because I want to feel like Shane McMahon deserves it again. I need to feel that way. And right now, I'm very indifferent towards Shane McMahon. And that's not how I want to feel going into the second biggest pay-per-view of the year. Okay. But in general, that Drew McIntyre match, man, it's always clear the couple of weeks before a pay-per-view who WWE has in their sights of where that the roster lies in terms of pecking order. And when you put Shane McMahon, or you put Kevin Owens against Drew McIntyre, and Kevin Owens wins clean, boy, that's telling. Because Drew McIntyre, since his return, I think, has been one of the best heels on the roster. Period. Both brands, if there is even a brand split anymore. I would say the entire company, Drew McIntyre, has the most believable promos. He's right up there with Samoa Joe. He has the look. He has the mean streak, and they just keep blowing it off, and having Drew lose the big match, whether it's Roman Reigns, now it's Kevin Owens. I think it's damaging his character to a point where I don't know if they can come back quickly. There's no quick fix for the damage that has been done to Drew McIntyre's credibility at this point. I don't think it's irreparable. It's just not going to be one of those, he'll win a couple of weeks in a row and the fans will be back with him and he's believable as this unbeatable heel. I just don't feel that. And again, it could be repaired in probably a couple of months and he could be a legitimate contender and we'll forget all of these losses that he's had over the last few months since WrestleMania, really. But it's going to take some repair. And I don't like seeing Drew McIntyre lose clean because there's so much good that's undone when it happens. Just so much. I just see so much potential in Drew McIntyre. I just love his entire look, and I love to hate him. That's a compliment. That's good heat. That doesn't mean I'm going to cheer him because he's a good heel. No. I would still boo him. I still want to see him get his ass kicked. I just think he's a very good heel. He makes me feel the emotion of anger. That's what heels do. Good heels do. So, okay. Moving on to the next topic from SmackDown Live, and I briefly touched on it earlier, and that's the Randy Orton and Kofi Kingston video. The video package they did, and mostly good here. Of course, you guys know I have some critiques. I can't be real with you guys if I don't give you critiques. I just wanted to let you guys know. I don't do critiques to sit here and bitch about the product. I do it because I love the product and I want to see it improve, and here's how you can do it. I don't try to poke holes in every storyline or every flaw in production. But WWE has been around for long enough to know that there are certain silly mistakes that should just not be happening in terms of plot holes and production and camera angles that shouldn't be there that make no sense. They've been in the game long enough that they should be held to a very high standard. And they just either get sloppy or don't care or just lean on the old notion. Wow, we're sports entertainment. We're not wrestling. So it doesn't matter. Fans don't care. They know just we're just entertainment. But you guys understand wrestling is the entertainment, right? Yeah. All right. So the good about this promo, the good about this backstage pre-taped video package was Randy Orton saying more than just the three most destructive letters in all of sports entertainment. Although he did end with that, and we all know what they are. I'm not even going to say them because it said too much. But it was good. We got some context. Randy Orton talking about how, so let's start in 2009 and listing off his accomplishments in 2009. He said he was already a Royal Rumble winner. He was already a world champion, a WWE champion, one of the longest reigning intercontinental champions, and all he had to do was be Randy Orton. And while he was doing that, Kofi Kingston was faking a Jamaican accent, and he was not Randy Orton. And he just ran down Kofi. It felt real. It felt legitimate. it was, again, it's always nice to hear Randy Orton speaking a little bit more from the heart rather than from the sheet of paper he was given a couple hours earlier to memorize his lines. Randy Orton felt more authentic here than usual. It was good to draw on that backstory. You have 10 years of a backstory. It's just very good to, once in a while, move away from the typical in-ring promo. This particularly helps Brock Lesnar. I believe Randy Orton and Brock Lesnar did this same thing when they met at SummerSlam, where they both had their say individually about the other one, that they went to OVW and they were brought up in 2002 and that their differences stopped there. And we all know what happened in that match, which is still to this day talked about as, did Brock Lesnar purposefully bust open Randy Orton? Was it part of the script or was it not? So that's a fascinating match that maybe I'll dissect someday too, but it's like the Randy Orton special of doing backstage pre-taped video package promos before SummerSlam. I don't know. I'm sure it's just coincidence, but I just somehow drew that parallel in my brain right now. But I'm excited for this program. They both, again, can turn it on when they want to turn it on. And I've said this before, I will say it again. The quality of this match is going to be dependent on two things. It will be dependent on how long they're given in terms of minutes. And more importantly, how driven is Randy Orton? Is Randy Orton going to give us the Randy Orton special? Kind of, well, it's same old Randy. It's like you walk in the restaurant, you know the guy, he's been there so many times, you just say, hey, buddy, you want the usual? It's similar to that. And maybe Randy Orton walks in this restaurant on August 11th, and when they ask him if he wants the usual, he may say, not today. I'm going to try something different. Maybe that's the case. Kind of weird analogy. I don't know why. I think I'm hungry. I'm talking about restaurants. Maybe that is what Randy does. We all know that Randy Orton and Kofi Kingston are close in real life. Maybe he does have that extra motivation to help Kofi Kingston at this point in his career. Or maybe, again, Randy Orton, who doesn't even have to try to have a good match. So, is it the usual 2.5 to 3-star Randy match? Or do we get a motivated 3.5 to 4-star Randy Orton-Kofi Kingston match? That's the question. And how much time is given. But right now, beyond that, beyond the motivation of Randy Orton, my question is, to you guys, are you interested in this program? Do you remember back in 2009? Do you remember the match they were talking about? That was a match that was supposed to propel Kofi Kingston to that next level. And as Kofi said last week on SmackDown Live, it never did. Because he said Randy Orton used his influence to keep him down. Maybe there's a shred of truth in that. Maybe not. Most likely, I would think not, but Randy Orton is the kind of guy that, yes, it's part of a story, but you actually wouldn't put that past his real-life persona. And I don't know, for better or worse. But the one thing, again, I told you guys there's a critique coming here, and that is Kofi Kingston, immediately following that very good video package that got me much more interested in this program, you have Kofi and Woods and Big E backstage smiling, making jokes, talking about their usual shtick and doing the aww, and Big E does his little thing and Kofi comes out smiling. Like, in order for me to care about this program on both ends, I need Kofi to care. And we got a much more serious Kofi last week, I get that. But if you just watched everything that Randy Orton said about you, are you really going to stand there and want to play, have fun in games? I mean, the New Day destroyed commentary last week. They absolutely killed it, and I don't mean that in a good way. I'm saying they hurt commentary in a big way. being lighthearted at times, they needed to be serious. I just don't like the New Day on commentary in general. They are too goofy and wacky and zany and sarcastic when they don't need to be, because it's all about getting themselves over, when they should be worried about actually trying to legitimize what's going on inside the ring. It's almost as if they're mocking their own sport when they're in on the commentary booth. It's bizarre. But for Kofi to just come out there and do that, and we get a shot backstage of him just pretending like nothing happened. Come on. You just had your opponent bury you for a 3 or 4 minute video package. You've got nothing to say? Beyond jokes? It makes no sense. And you know, this is an ongoing issue with Kofi Kingston and, to be honest with you, others. Because how many times do you have somebody lose a championship, lose a big match, and they just come out and, like, nothing's going on, nothing's happened before, come out like it's just another day at the office? It can't be. How can it be? We're all supposed to believe this is your dream to be in WWE. It's your childhood dream to be in WWE. Oh, my God. WWE is the end-all, be-all. It is heaven on earth. And I get here, and then I lose a big match, but oh, shucks, it's okay. I'm back out here for the next night. I have a short memory. I mean, come on. It makes no sense. And Kofi is probably Exhibit A and the guiltiest of them all here. But, all right. Moving on down the line here. Talk a little bit about this Bayley-Ember Moon relationship. Now, Ember Moon ended up losing to Alexa Bliss this past Tuesday night on SmackDown Live. Relatively cleanly, if I might add. Finally, Alexa Bliss gets a victory with Twisted Bliss. When's the last time that happened? So it was nice to see Alexa Bliss get a victory and get her career and her win-loss record back on track. Good. Yay. And yes, we all know that eventually Nikki Cross and Alexa will split. We all know. But until that happens, this duo I'm enjoying. I think they have good chemistry. I think that these two have more to do than they've done already. So would I put the split at SummerSlam? I probably wouldn't. I'd actually string this out a little longer if they were going to plan at SummerSlam. I wouldn't keep them till the end of the year. Maybe till, I don't know, the October pay-per-view. I believe it's Hell in a Cell or whatever gimmicky thing they have. I wouldn't go too much longer, but another month to 2 months is feasible. And then have Alexa turn on Nikki or Nikki turn on Alexa, whatever. Who wants to play what role? Maybe it'll be Nikki turning on Alexa. I mean, you just don't know. But this, my point about this was, A, we had Alexa win a match. That's a start. B, we had Ember Moon lose as she approaches SummerSlam. So now Alexa can have a claim to the number one contendership by beating Ember Moon, who also has a championship match at SummerSlam. So do they make this a triple threat? Or a fatal four-way? I could see WWE doing that, because now Alexa has a claim to the number one contendership. Bayley, to me, is the bigger issue here. She's what I really want to discuss. Because Bayley has been floating out there in purgatory ever since she won the Women's Money in the Bank ladder match, cashed in the Women's Money in the Bank briefcase, and became a SmackDown Live Women's Champion, defeating Charlotte after she defeated Becky Lynch. And since that time, Bayley's reactions from the audience have been just slowly going down and down and down and down, to quieter, to starting to boo. Bayley's, she's got a lot of issues right now. WWE, if they are trying to continue to cast her as a babyface, need to be very, very careful. They are on the brink of the fans turning on Bayley again, by the way. Again. I don't know if, I mean, in fact, if you're going to put your finger on something, I don't know if it's the fans who are just tired of the act, tired of the side ponytail of trying to relate to the young girls of, oh, look at, you know, hey, you have someone to look up to. I can put my hair to the side too and make me younger. I'm just like you. I mean, I don't know. I think that has a little bit to do with it. She said she's done with hugs, and yet her LED board for weeks and weeks and weeks has still said and does still say, I'm a hugger. So, well, which one are you, Bailey? Really? She still has the Bailey buddies. Okay, I feel like I'm at a used car dealership every time I see those. I can't connect with the Bailey character. From this shy little girl that was in NXT, the little engine that could became the big engine that thought she could. That is, and Bailey's got a little bit too much confidence right now. I think she could be a good heel, to be totally honest with you. I think turning Bailey heel would be the right thing for her career. Because right now, this main roster version of Bailey is all but endearing and all but inspiring. She is right now the epitome of a babyface trying to cling on for dear life and trying to just scrape on and hold on to every cheer. Her reactions are getting worse and worse and worse. And again, I'm a fan of Bailey. I mean, I know you got, when I'm being critical here, it's because I just think Bailey's miscast. I think that the welcome of her being a babyface has worn out its welcome. And if WWE thought that just, you know, shocking everybody, shocking the world, and having her win the Money in the Bank women's briefcase and then cash it in that same night and become SmackDown Live Women's Champion would be the end-all, cure-all, well, it got people's attention. Most anybody I spoke to before and during that week did not predict Bailey to do either. So, yes, it was a shock. And I think some fans were hopeful that, hey, this is the revitalization that her career needed. But here's the thing. This is just an age-old adage that I believe in firmly. The belt doesn't make the person makes the belt. And with that thinking, that short-term shock thinking, it was, let's put the belt on Bailey. It'll make her relevant. It'll get the fans behind her. Nobody sees it coming. Okay, you won the nobody saw it coming battle. But did you really win the it's going to change Bailey's character and the fans are going to rally behind her long-term thinking? No. Because Bailey is essentially the same kind of overconfident, almost condescending at times, character. And I just think at this point they probably should turn her heel. It would be a hell of an experiment. A hell of an experiment to see Bailey, when you think about what she was in NXT, to see her heel. That would be I would love to see it. Do I think it's going to happen? Probably not. She does have a very solid young girl following that all put their ponytails the same way Bailey does. Ugh. But as a grown-ass man, I just can't relate with this wannabe little girl that's in a grown woman's body and is overconfident for no particular reason. It's hard for me to relate to that character. And she, her promos also kind of reflect that as well, as kind of an arrogance. But I don't need that from Bailey. I don't need that from Bailey. But as a heel, go for it. Go for it. But again, on SmackDown Live, Bailey ends up giving Ember Moon the Bailey to Belly as a payback for last week when Ember Moon gave Bailey the Eclipse. So as Bailey said when she was going up the ramp, now we're even, Steven. Who says that, by the way? Even Steven. Oh, boy. I mean, that's... I think I might have said that the last time in fifth grade. I mean, I'm being real. I may have said that exact phrase when I was in fifth grade. That may have been the last time. Even Steven. I don't know. Bailey's got some awkward quirks about her. I'll just say that. Again, I'm a Bailey fan, and I'd have her on my roster in a second. There's just something that needs to change. just something needs to be changing. Maybe it's her entrance. Maybe it's the silly side ponytail that is cringeworthy and just transparently corporate, if that even makes sense. Can you actually have a hairstyle that's corporate? Yes, you can. Yes, you can. And how? Is by taking her hair and making sure that it fits her little emoji character that they put on the screen when she enters the ring, and making sure that it's able to be put on a t-shirt so some eight-year-old little girl can go, "Ooh, I can do that. That's something I can do. Now I'm just like Bailey." I can't stand those kinds of characters. So you wrap this all together, it comes down to this babyface version of Bailey is starting to sink. And she is sinking quickly. Does Sasha Banks come back? I think the answer to that is yes. But does she come in? Is she coming back in support of Bailey, or is she coming back as a rival to Bailey? My guess is that we get our answer at SummerSlam when Sasha returns. That's my guess. If Sasha returns, no, I haven't heard anything, but that's my guess. When most people expected her to show up at the last pay-per-view, and I did too, I think that this return and surprise return could be saved for SummerSlam. Okay, moving down the line here, I did want to talk Daniel Bryan, who continues to give us the silent treatment. He's Chris Jericho-ing us from 2012, or whatever the hell he came out and said nothing week after week after week, which is just what, supposed to be annoying and pissing people off. And I guess it's doing the job. I mean, but you're really just going to pay Daniel Bryan to show up week after week on SmackDown Live and just say nothing. I mean, maybe he's hurt and that's the case. And maybe they're just buying themselves time to have Bryan heal his body. And if that's the case, that's fine. I'm all on board for that. Anytime you can give these guys and gals time off to rest their bodies, minds, and souls, I'm full support of that. Full support. So, all right. Moving down the line here, we also on SmackDown Live had a Shinsuke Nakamura versus Ali match. This was a non-title match, and it ended with Ali winning. And how did Ali win? Anybody? Anybody out there? Just take a wild guess. You'll never, ever, ever get it. Yeah, it was... Wow, you got it. He won with a small package. A roll-up. When the heck is the last time WWE did that? I'm telling you. I just don't know when they get on these kicks. Why they get on these kicks of finishes ending in DQ. That used to be the large booking crutch. Now it's the small package. Because if the babyface wins, it's, oh, wow, what a resourceful human being. What a resourceful competitor to be able to, you know, come up with that wrestling maneuver. If you're a heel, it's, oh, what a lucky win. I mean, so it can be narrated both ways, but it's being overused a lot. So Ali wins this match, puts him in contention for the Intercontinental Championship, which is really the only reason that this actually happened. But I'm fine with it. I think given, again, enough time, these two could have a very, very good match, assuming at SummerSlam. All right. We had Kofi Kingston versus AJ Styles, by the way. Kofi Kingston won this after he hit Trouble in Paradise on AJ when he went for, presumably, the phenomenal forearm. And Big E and Woods dropped Gallows and Anderson at ringside. So once again, we got a Kofi Kingston win, who continues to ride this wave of win after win after win after win after win. My question, and I could be wrong, I'm sure the Twitter police will let me know, has Kofi Kingston lost a match since he won at WrestleMania? I want to say no. I really do. I really do. So, I mean, good for him. Good for Kofi. I think that he is right now in a good place in his career. He better relish every second, because eventually this fairy tale will come crashing down and he will wake up from it. It's going to. It's a fact. So if I were him, and I'm sure he is, relish every second. as the WWE champion. I really believe that. So, and SmackDown Live concluded with Reigns backstage arriving for an interview, but as he approaches, I can't remember her name, but the interviewer, a forklift comes out of nowhere and knocks something on top of Reigns. A bunch of speakers and equipment fall on him, and there were crew members who tried to rush to help him. Reigns appeared to be okay. He declined medical attention, and it looks like that we aren't going to hear from Reigns about who his SummerSlam opponent will be. So, if you didn't know or didn't hear my theory, my very proven theory that is a hypothesis at this point, it's an educated guess. All roads lead to Roman Reigns. That is WWE's path of success. If you're lost, you don't know where to go with the booking, have no fear. Roman Reigns is here. All roads lead to Roman. And I explained it last night, so I'm not going to go into super depth about it again. You can go check out the show. But it's as if when Roman Reigns doesn't even have the belt, it's just purposefully that WWE is taking him out of there to try to get the fans to go, okay, well, he's not in championship picture, so I don't care what he's doing. Yet he's in the main event of every show. He's the lasting image of both shows. He is oftentimes opening shows, although that has begun to change a little bit with the new management coming in of Paul Heyman and Eric Bischoff. But Roman continues to be the main event, which is the last segment of the show. So don't gimme that Roman Reigns isn't being shoved down our throats, because he is in a different way. Nonetheless, with that out of the way, we have a mystery attacker for Roman Reigns. Many people suspected Samoa Joe. I don't think it is. Two reasons. One, we've already seen Joe call out Reigns, and Reigns has put him down on his back clean. Roman has stood tall against Joe, and we've already seen the payoff, just as we've already seen the payoff of Shane and Kevin Owens. And number two, Roman Reigns, in Vince's eyes, needs a bigger opponent. So who is the one that actually dropped that equipment on Roman Reigns? Who could it be? I really don't have too many guesses. I'm throwing it to you guys. Tweet me at the WWE Podcast, or send me an email at realwwepodcast@gmail.com. Let me know who you guys think and believe is the mystery attacker for Roman Reigns. It was an interesting way to end the show, but it just was, Roman's got to end the show, of course. He may not be the champion, but he's closing every show, so it's still WWE sending a message. Oh, don't worry, they'll send a statement next, because if it's not a statement, it's a message to me. It's, God, oh, yeah, God almighty. All right. The other thing I wanted to touch on, too, before I wrap the whole show up here, is Aleister Black, who is now being challenged by Sami Zayn. We know that now. Aleister Black is, I don't know, I'm enjoying his character. He speaks differently. He enunciates differently. He looks different. His promos are done backstage in a dark room. When he speaks, you listen. He has the it factor with that. The matches he's had with Cesaro have been very good. And now, is this WWE turning him babyface because he's going to be facing Sami Zayn, who is arguably a hotter heel, a more hated heel, I should say? Is that what this is? I think, unfortunately, this is just another L in the loss column for Sami Zayn, who is the next sacrificial pig up, or sacrificial lamb, pick your animal. He is the next sacrificial lamb for the ascent of Aleister Black. I don't know why it needs to be Sami Zayn. Both are technically heels. Sami needs a win in the worst way, and he's not going to get it up against a up-and-coming rising star. It's just not going to happen. I miss him being the critic of the critics coming out. I don't know what the electric chair segment was a month or 2 or 3 months ago, whatever that was. I miss him interacting with the fans and coming out and ripping us a new one. That's what I loved. He's the critic of the critics, so be the critic of the critics. I miss it. I miss it. I miss it. And Sami Zayn is very good on the mic, very good in the ring, underutilized to the max, and has so much potential. But right now, he is on a hell of a losing streak. I think the only match he's won since he's returned has been the tag team match he had with Kevin Owens at, I can't remember what pay-per-view it was. It might have been Money in the Bank, and they ended up winning. That's it. That's it, guys. Kevin Owens or Sami Zayn has not won a match since then. Really, it's scary, but it's true. I'm pretty sure on that one. All right, so that was SmackDown Live as a whole. As a whole, I think it was a very good show. Trish showed up to play. Roman Reigns has a mystery attacker, which we haven't seen that kind of a storyline in a while, which is nice. It adds intrigue. Anytime there's more questions than answers, and it leaves you wanting to know more, the show did its job. Certainly being 2 hours helps, but the flow of the show felt very natural. It didn't feel forced. It was, I think, a well-paced show. There was a lot of wrestling on the show. I like that. You had stars that normally aren't featured. Ali made his return. Sami Zayn stepping up to Aleister Black. Trish, again, she was very good. They set up that match for SummerSlam, and Kevin Owens continues his stunning ways, although I would look to see him get his ass beat down and beat down bad next week, which would make sense because, again, it's about building business. You're a business. You're not a charity. The best way to build business is to want to have fans want to pay to see your adversary get their ass handed to them. So I don't think that's a business model that is lost on anybody in WWE, but sometimes the obvious needs to be stated. It needs to be reminded. So, okay. Well, guys, thank you for joining me. I mean, it's always a blast to be here. And if you want to support the show, a couple of ways to do it, by the way. One, absolutely free. A couple of free ways. Really free ways if you're like, oh, he's looking for my money. No, I'm not, actually. I'm looking for you to support the show. And how do you do that? You can just give me a quick 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts. Real easy. I'm not begging for it. Just if you have a moment, please do that. You can also head on over to my website at wwepodcast.com. On there, every show's there. And if you click on the Support the Show tab, there's an Amazon link there. In that Amazon link, all you got to do is click it. What does that do? It attaches anything you buy to the show. This doesn't add anything extra to your order. It doesn't cost you any more money. All it does is tell Amazon, hey, I went through the WWE podcast to make this sale. I'm going to give WWE podcast a percentage of the sale. That's it. Doesn't cost you anything extra. And it's a super easy way and quick way to help the show. So just head on over to the Support the Show tab and click on the Amazon banner. It's right there, and it'll bring you right to the Amazon site, and you do your shopping as normal. It's super easy, and I know that some of you have done it, and I really, really do appreciate it, so thank you so much for that. And again, we'll be working on an NXT podcast. I'm considering, there's a key word, considering doing an AEW podcast come this fall. I understand the name of this show is the WWE podcast. I get that. This isn't just the pro wrestling podcast, which would cover any brand of wrestling. But at the same time, I think it'd be smart business to possibly go that route. Maybe we look at an AEW podcast. So if that's the case, and you are still with me here, if you're interested in doing an AEW review podcast come this fall, when AEW debuts on TV and they have pay-per-views still ongoing, if you're interested in being a host of your own AEW podcast, and it would just be under the WWE podcast umbrella, but you could host your own show, give your thoughts, you can bring on your own co-hosts, let me know. Shoot me an email at realwwepodcast@gmail.com, or again, or on Twitter at the WWE podcast. I'd love to talk with you a little bit more and see if it's something that maybe we can come to terms on and get that show on the road for this feed. But again, it's just something in talk. But I am going to be, in the near future, getting an NXT podcast that's not going to be in featuring me in any capacity. It's a completely new co-host that can do whatever the heck that they want to do. And so I think that'll be a good thing too. And so that's it. That's it, guys. Tomorrow, again, don't forget, I'll be back with my co-host, and we will be discussing everything that is this week in WWE. You're not going to want to miss this one as we creep closer to SummerSlam, which is just under 2 weeks away. So, guys, thank you so much for listening. And as always, I'll talk to you next time.